Okay, my name is Jack Mangan. I work at New Milford Ambulance, Community Ambulance in New Milford, Connecticut. I've been an EMT now going on a little over four and a half years. I've done a good majority of calls. In our service alone, we do 600 calls a year. We are the largest town per square miles in the state of Connecticut, so it keeps us pretty busy. We have all different types of calls. We have anywhere from a vagrant sleeping on a beach where we have to assume or think that the person's deceased. As far as that, all the way going to a newborn baby being born or death in a house when somebody tries to wake up their loved one and they just don't get up. I had one call where we were called out to do a presumption, and the police in our town are MRTs. All of them are MRTs, and the fire departments are all MRTs, medical response technicians, who are capable of giving CPR and first aid and carry oxygen. They got to the scene, I guess I'm going to say 2 minutes before we did. We walked in, and a woman was laying in bed. It was roughly around April. And it wasn't that freezing cold, but the room was warm. She was warm. She had quilt on her, but she was deceased. The people, the family in the house were, they tried to wake her up, I believe, an hour prior to us getting there, and she wouldn't wake up. And they just assumed that, well, she must have been tired or she had a rough night. Or for whatever reason, they didn't go back to wake her up. However, about an hour later, they did try to go back and wake her up, and they found that she wasn't breathing. You go to the scene. You do what you're told to do. You do what your training tells you to do. I can't fall back on that enough. I have people in my crew that's what they think of on the way to the call. Okay, we have a presumption. What are we going to do? What are the things that we have to look at? Every state has a protocol and how they deal with that, you know, death. There's certain things that they need to do to make sure that the person is dead or deceased. And we went through that protocol, and you know, you leave the room, and children are crying, people are crying, grown men and women are crying, and all you can really say is, you know, I'm very sorry. You know, pick up your equipment. In our state, we don't take the deceased person. We have a funeral home come and do it. And we just say, I'm sorry, and move on our way. And that's what I have as far as that one's concerned.
And how did that affect you?
You feel hurt. You feel hurt. You do fall back and you say, gee, I remember when my aunt or my uncle or my mother or my dad passed away. You've got to realize and you can't forget why you're there. Okay. You have to be very empathetic to the people that are in the next room and the people that are crying, because they do have feelings, and they just lost a loved one. In this case that I just mentioned to you, the person was visiting, so they didn't live there. It's something that you have to think about, but you have to go back and you have to say to yourself, I'm here to do a job. You know, this person did not make it. Lividity was setting in, so she's well over 6 or 10 minutes before, you know, she was passed on. By us trying to do a life-saving protocol would be, you know, worthless. Well, I shouldn't say worthless, maybe futile. At that point, after seeing lividity, we call up medical control and we tell him what we found. We go through a protocol and he calls it and says, okay, fine. We get the information. We make sure that this is the person that it is. And then we, you know, fill out our documentation, because that's very important that we do that. And you move on. And you walk away and you get back into the bus quietly. Very important thing to do is after every call is to say, did I do everything right? Well, did I do what I was supposed to do? Did I follow the protocols to the number? Okay. Again, one of the things that I questioned on that particular call was when we did get to the scene and the police or the PD was in the room, they really weren't doing anything. And if you're an MRT, you know, we should be checking signs of life. We should be checking vitals. If there is no breathing, then we should be working on her doing CPR and getting the AED ready. You know, these are things that you have to go through. And your training falls back. You automatically go back to your training. When you're in that bus and you're going to a scene of an accident, you're going to a scene any type, domestic, whatever it may be, you have to think about what did your training tell you to do. And, you know, that's one of the things that we'd like to fall back on. Karen, what do you have?
My name's Karen Bresson. I'm also an EMT basic for New Milford, Connecticut. I started about 3.5 years ago, and I guess the challenge then was for me to deal with the old elderly. We have 2 nursing homes, and we have 4 assisted living areas. So we have a lot of elderly people that we pick up on a regular basis. Sometimes, you know, their illness is terminal. Sometimes it's they've been this way for 10 years. So my challenge, since I am a psych, I have a bachelor's in psych, was to have them laughing by the time they went to the hospital. And it worked. Or talk about their family or talk about their life. And the ride was very pleasant for them because they forgot what they were doing, you know, why they were there for the how many times they rode on the ambulance. It was.
How do you get them to laugh?
They do. They laugh.
And what do you say? How do you make that happen?
We just start talking. It's easy. They're really, they want to talk about themselves.
So you get them to get your patients to talk, and you have to listen to.
You have to be a very good listener.
What does that mean to listen?
Well, you have to be a very good listener when it comes to the elderly. They don't have anyone else to talk to. If they're lucky enough to have family that visits them, which isn't too often, they're ready for the first ear that opens up to them.
You have to be a good listener. Be a good listener.
And with we transport probably 99.9% of our calls. A lot of groups don't. And, because of that, you have to have some of those skills. I enjoy it. Especially the elderly. I am not one for blood and guts, so if it's a car accident, I kind of stay away from it, if I can. So that's a definite 60% of our calls. In fact, we do over 1,600 calls a year. So that's something you have to deal with. And not everybody likes dealing with the elderly, but I find them very fascinating. You can learn a lot from them and their lives. The other thing is, when you work on a crew, you've got to be able to work with the other crew members. And that's probably the biggest difficulty in a group, to find members that you can work with. So once you get that group, you don't want to deviate in any which way. In our town, we have assigned crews that are on certain days. We're a Sunday day crew. But if it's a call beyond the first crew and the second crew has to go out, it's kind of you formed who's ever around. Just jumps on the ambulance and goes. And that may not be the person you want to be on the call with.
How do you work that dynamic then if you don't anticipate? Because we're all there sometimes. How do you make it work out?
You have to make it work out.
How do you do that?
Yeah, you do it. Well, you do it because the goal is to go out there and make sure that person that we're going to see, or child or infant, okay, it's up to us to make sure that we get out there and take care of that situation. Forget about our differences and what we may have on the side. Forget about that stuff. Here's our goal. We've got a child that fell off a swing. We have a child that's been hit by a car. He's got a fractured skull. We have to move and forget about it. And you know what happens? When we get to that call and we have a child down, and it could be an elderly person, a geriatric person, it doesn't matter. Everybody falls into place. Everybody says what they have to do, and everybody does what they have to do. We know what's happening. We know what's happening. I know what she's going to do before she does it. She knows what I'm going to do before I do it. And it just works like cake. After the call is done, you leave the accident, you leave the hospital, you get back in the bus and you say, did we do everything right? What did we do over? We've got people in our organization that turn around and they get behind the wheel. Some of them are just drivers. And they say, could we have done this call any better? And that's a big thing. What are some of the things that we forgot? You do forget. I'm not saying you're not perfect. You're not a machine out there. I was taught to do this, and this is the way I do it. Well, sometimes it doesn't work that way. Okay.
Working with other team members can be frustrating, but you have to keep it to yourself. You know, the reason you're there is for the patient. You complain all you want after you, you know, close the doors to the room of the hospital and say, okay, now I can complain about him, but not in front of the patient. You know, you
never
try to be very professional about the whole thing. And if anything does go wrong on a call where you say, you know, this is not quite right, there's ways to, you know, stop them from doing something or whatever that you may feel that's not right. It's not always easy, but you've got to be careful because you don't want, you know, we're there not to do any further harm. We're there to, for them to have a safe trip to the hospital. We're there to help them feel a little better if we can by treatment of any kind, oxygen or whatever it might be, that we can give them to feel better. But the ultimate goal is the patient care, and that's when you have to focus on that. Even if you're dealing with a couple difficult people that, you know, you may do the whole call yourself all by your lonesome because they just won't pitch in. And you got to do it because why am I there? I am there for the patient, not for them. And that's what you got to remember.
A lot of the people listening to this recording are going to be brand new EMT basics or brand new paramedics. And what I'm hearing you say is that it's okay for that person to say, is that really how we should be taking care of this patient? Is that accurate?
Well, I wouldn't go out and ask them if it's okay, not in front of the patient. It would be afterwards, or go to a supervisor. I would not, depending on our relationship, whoever that might be, that may be easy to do or that may be difficult to do. If we don't really have one, I would not go to them. I would go to a supervisor. But I wouldn't drop it. Because I'd want to know for myself, can I ever build a relationship with those people? Probably not, because they're determined not to make one. So, you know, we have over 60 members, all different personalities. So I'm going to get those. But the good thing is there's a lot of good people out there, too. You know, for the few that are bad and you say, oh, I don't want to deal with them, there's a lot of good people out there. And it's great to go on calls with some of these people that think like I do. So that's what makes it all worthwhile. All right. Every now and then you got to.
And
you
Karen's
bite
right.
The bullet, so to speak, and just do it.
Karen's,
you know?
Right. There's a lot of personalities out there, okay? And everybody has a different personality. And there may be times where you're going to be teamed up with a person that may have the personality that kind of doesn't fit with you and you kind of clash. Listen, you know, forget about your differences. This is the job at hand. This is what we have to do, and this is how we have to handle it. And that's the priority. That's the goal that we have to set for ourselves, because that's the training. And that's what we sign those papers for, to get in there and do that job. I don't think EMS gets looked at as good or as the way the fire department or police department get looked at. I mean, you know, we do some pretty hair-raising stuff to get people out of accidents and to do things to help another person. You know, We just go out there and we do the job. That's what it's all about. We just do the job. And when it's over, we go back inside and we go back to bed just like anybody else goes back to bed. And sometimes you think about that. Sometimes you put your head back on a pillow and you say, boy, I hope that person turns out okay. Hey, what are you going to do? This is what we do. This is what we chose to do in life, whether it be a paid service or volunteered service. This is what we chose to do. So be good at what you do. You know, say to yourself, I'm going to be the best EMT I can be. And that's all you can be. Be the best. Learn. Go back to training. Do your continuing training.
My advice to new EMTs would be, if you can ride with all different types of people, do it. Do it. Even though we may have people that we clash with, you may be able to learn something from them. So it's not all total loss. And we have learned from people that we have clashed with. But I've also learned from kids my children's age. And it's been great because I love it. They love it. They click, you know, their brain can absorb all this information. I don't absorb it as well. And it's great working with them. Because they may think of something I haven't thought of. And that's what's great about being in a crew. We may not all think alike, which is fine. But as long as we cover all the things we need to cover in a call, that's what it's all about.
How has EMS changed your lives?
Oh, a lot. Since, you know, I I'm the type of person that challenges myself all through my life. Through high school, I challenge myself in a lot of different ways. You know, I bet you I can get an A on this course, or I know I can get a B plus, even though it's, you know, trig, it's not a big deal, but I know I can do it. And you strive for that. You're parked at a, you're at a light, you're at a stoplight, you see an ambulance go by, and you say, you know what, I bet you I could be an EMT. And sure enough, you find out that a few frontiers are also on the Corps. Hey, could you get me an application? You get the application, you fill it out, and before you know it, you get elders that are in the service and officers that are in the service that look at you and say, these are one of our better EMTs or veteran EMTs, and they pick on me or they pick on Karen. It makes you feel good. I think it's a great thing that I did, and I encourage anybody else. And we do. We were part of the recruitment and retention committee in our squad. And, you know, that's a big thing for EMS too, retention, because a lot of people kind of fall out of it and they have other things in life that takes priority. But recruitment's a big thing. And if you can get anybody else to come in into the service and go to school and learn, it's great. It's a great, great learning.
I think a young person coming out of high school that doesn't quite know what they want to do and are interested in maybe the police, the fire, the EMS, and they're not quite sure, taking this class, they will learn a lot about themselves, a lot about people, and it's extremely beneficial. Whether you're an MRT or an EMT, it's another feather in your cap, so to speak. You walk away with some knowledge that, wow, you know, when somebody talks about a medical problem, I actually know what it's about. I have come from a very healthy family, didn't have a clue what some of this stuff was. And now that I am exposed to it all, I want to learn more. And that's why we're here today, is going to the national conference to expand our knowledge, or, you know, make it a little sharper than it is already, and always willing to learn, because that only makes us better EMTs and better for the patient.
Open Airways podcasts are produced by FISDAP with support from EMSResponder.com. All recordings express the opinions and experience of the speaker and do not constitute legal or medical advice. This and other recordings can be found at www.openairways.net.